You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another provocative episode of Ask Drone You in this week's new show. Joining me today, as always, is the man known for tyranny, known for pushing the envelope, not only in flight, but in print as well. I'm talking about the Flying Dutchman. Welcome, my friend.
Hey, Paul. How are you this week, man?
Doing all right, brother. Doing better than usual. How are you?
Pretty good. Things are warming up here in New York. We're going to hit the 60s in the afternoon tomorrow, apparently. So spring is almost here, which means more drone flying. And that's very welcome after all these cold weeks that we've had here. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's actually nice that daylight savings time is going to hit us this Sunday on the 8th. Very excited about that. Also kind of excited, depending on your perception of the industry, that the comment period for remote ID has come to the end. Does this mean that we're seeing the end of remote ID, or is this just the beginning, Haya?
I don't know. I think it's definitely the end of a 60-day period that had a lot of people working hard, reading through documents and putting together their responses and their comments for the FAA. I think the biggest one probably was from Brendan Schumann, who I think hit 89 pages. Just for anybody who might not have followed this, the FAA had a commenting period that was open from late last year until March 2nd this year. And I think they got a little bit more than they bargained for. I think it's a little over 53,000 comments. And comments range from like small little blurbs of text of people who are just severely unhappy to very detailed, very specific comments. For instance, the one from DJI. And we can actually talk a little bit more about this. One of the things that the FAA pointed out in their proposed rules is the expenses and the cost of having a remote ID system for drones. And I think DJI really zeroed in on that because the FAA came up with an estimate that over a 10-year period, if you were to make that a net present value, so you bring all those numbers back to today's value, basically, the cost of remote ID would be $582 million. That's not quite true. The DJI said they did the same math and they come back with $5.6 billion, which is more than nine times more than the FAA estimate. And of course, we all know that the consumer, the hobbyist drone pilot, the small drone operator, we're going to be the ones paying for these expenses in the end. So that's a very big thing. I didn't expect it to be that much higher.
Well, and that's not even accounting for the fact that if the proposed rules go into effect as is, there's no way to backdate or make our current drones comply with the proposed rules. So, you know, the whole $5.6 billion is not factoring in for the, let's say, 4 or 5 million people that own 1 to 10 drones and then the cost of those drones and that loss. And I would say that loss, as calculated here at Drone U, would put us over $60,000 completely wasted if the proposed remote ID rules go through. And, you know, it's really interesting, Haya, because I've been hearing some different reactions to the number of comments that are happening with the NPRM. One particular user out of New York, a good friend of mine, Peter, he said, did you see that there's just about 54,000 comments on the remote ID? And I said, yeah, isn't that great? And he said, no, it's pathetic. If you think about it, it only represents 1/5 of the AMA membership. If the AMA membership would have actually come together and written something that was worthwhile and then had individual personalized responses showcasing their personal stories, the impact could have been so much greater. I mean, if you think about it, the AMA really shot everyone in the foot when they put out the email to just cut, copy, and paste the comments. And we saw a few thousand comments like that. And it's, you know, I think the AMA, again, going back to this bifurcation, this disorganization between the different sects of the drone industry. And I mean sex as in S-E-C-T. And I'm talking about the FPV, the hobbyists. I'm talking about the commercial guys. And then, you know, you have the different verticals within commercial. So, you know, this all comes back to the fact that at the end of the day, we are all hobbyists. And at the end of the day, if we're all hobbyists and we're all doing this for the love of flight, and if the love of flight won't get your lazy ass on a computer to a website to spend 30 minutes to write a response to say why these proposed regulations would literally murder our industry and put it in a way that's in a greater good. If you can't spend 30 minutes of your life doing that for the love of flight, then I'm not sure that you deserve the right to fly. If we're going to be that lazy in society, oh man, we are screwed, Haya. We are totally screwed. And you know what's even more interesting? If you actually search through the comments, some of the biggest names in the industry completely love this proposed rule. And you're sitting there pulling your hair out. People like Skyward and AirMap, you're like, oh man, gosh, I can never, ever, ever support you ever again. Like, the comments are terrible. And then you have people like SUAS News. You know, Patrick Egan, he's been a very big proponent against DJI. And instead of utilizing intelligence and practical problems to tell a story about why remote ID is so bad, he just published why DJI sucks and then did it anonymously, not knowing that every PDF that's uploaded to the FAA's NPRM site is being indexed, so they're searchable. So we can literally figure out who these anonymous people are. And it just goes to show how a lot of old baby boomers really don't understand the internet. And no offense, you old people should not be literally creating the rules and regulatory guidelines of security. I mean, Egan, man, you could have been so succinct and simple and said, all right, FAA is worried about a security threat from DJI. Well, what does it take to get information from here to a Chinese server? Oh, yeah, it takes the internet. Oh, you want to connect all the drones to the internet and potentially provide for the greatest data breach in history to provide a real-time map of the United States to any foreign intelligence? Like, come on, FAA, use your head. It's just one of these things, and I'm sorry to get on my high horse here, Haya, but at what point are we going to get off of our damn asses and do something about it? 54,000 comments is great. I'm super excited. But this is round one of many rounds, Haya, and it's going to be a bloody fight.
You know, having all the comments out there is actually nice because it kind of everybody's showing their colors, right? Their true colors. So you can go through them, you can see who's saying what, and then you can pretty much figure out what their agenda is. So I think it's nice to have that point in time right now where we know, okay, we all know who's on what team basically when it comes to being in favor of drones and being in favor of saving our hobby basically. To your point about the number of comments, I mean, yeah, if you look at it that way, it might seem like the number is on the low end. However, in reality, I think there's probably so much overlap contained in all these comments. I mean, if we can't get the message across to the FAA with 53,000 comments, having 100,000 or 200,000 would not probably have made any difference. So I think there's so much good stuff in there. What I've noticed is a lot of people are just against the whole internet connectivity thing for remote ID for drones, as well as the privacy. Those seem to be the two biggest concerns people have. Thirdly, you could say that the real case for safety and security might not be there when it comes to remote ID. Those things keep coming back in the comments. I'm just really interested in figuring out how the FAA is going to deal with these comments. I mean, how are they going to find the time and the manpower to actually read through them, sort them, categorize them, and then figure out what to do with it to change these rules? But something needs to happen. I mean, they can't ignore this. I did an article about how the rulemaking process actually works, and it's very interesting because in it, it says that any federal agency, including the FAA, when there are other alternatives available that basically provide the same solution, but do it in a more effective or more cost-effective way, the FAA needs to consider those options. And I think a lot of these cases have been pushed forward in these comments. So it's going to be interesting to see how the FAA deals with it and how they're going to amend these rules. If they leave them the way they are, I agree with you and a lot of the other people I spoke to, the compliance just won't be there. People are not going to participate in remote ID, and then it kind of backfires, and then they don't achieve at all what they set out to do with remote ID. So it's going to be interesting the next couple of months and maybe even years when it comes to this.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. So finally, our designer, love our designer, came back and he really beautitized this table that I put together of the FAA Drone Advisory Committee membership certificates, meaning, okay, in the drone industry, the FAA tasked the Drone Advisory Committee with providing information to help dictate how to solve real-world problems and help navigate through a remote ID kind of system, help us navigate through the industry growth, help us navigate through how maybe regulations should change. So the FAA has about 30 people who are supposed to represent the interests of the industry. And in an effort to try to figure out how many of these representatives, excuse me, there are 35 of them, how many of these representatives actually fly drones? How many actually have practical real-world experience? So they know the problems that they face with bad batteries, the problems that they face in mag interference, the problems that they face in taking off in areas near steel, right? How many of these people would actually be able to solve real-world problems, right? So 35 people. I don't know if you saw the table, Haya, but if you have seen it, do you remember how many of the four people have Part 107 licenses?
But if I can chip in there, I mean, of course, you don't necessarily have to have a Part 107 to fly drones. So there might be another handful or maybe a couple of people that actually fly drones as well. I think you do make a very good point, though. I mean, in the DAC committee, there's a lot of professionalism there. I mean, a lot of people come from backgrounds that are very useful when it comes to making new rules. However, I feel that if they want to keep all those people in place, that 35 seats is not going to cut it. They probably should add another 10 or 15 or 20 seats to that same committee and then reserve those seats for people who actually fly drones for a living or fly drones for a hobby and get the voice of those people in that same committee, because right now it's absent.
Yeah, I could not agree more with you, Haya. And I know you're saying that some people, like Brendan, for example, are flying drones as hobbyists. I get that. But if you are on an advisory committee making statements about forwarding the industry through regulation, don't you think it's important to have a very good understanding and knowledge of the baseline regulations in which we are flying?
Yeah, I totally agree. And what was it, Michael Chasen, the chairman of the DAC committee, he said in the last session they had last week in Washington that I believe that two of the 35 seats are vacant right now. They're looking to fill those two spots and they're actually considering to or looking to get people who actually fly drones to take those two seats. I think it'd be great if they did that. But still, I mean, that still doesn't bring up the number of active drone pilots to a respectable level. I think at least half the committee should consist of people who actually fly drones, whether they do it professionally or as a hobby. As long as they know what they're talking about, their experience, they know the rules, the regulations, the operations, and know what kind of situations you run into in day-to-day drone flying, I think it's those kind of people that we need on the committee. And right now we don't have them. And when you have that committee in charge of advising the FAA when it comes to new rules, and you don't have people actually fly drones on that committee, then yeah, things are going to go wrong.
Seriously, a lot of things are going to go wrong. I mean, a lot. Wow. Yeah. It's really fascinating, Haya. And so I know there have been some other information that's come out. Even, you know, there was the protest in Washington, D.C., and the FAA had to close their doors. What happened?
Apparently, I mean, the protest started already on Friday. I thought it was going to start on Saturday, but I was checking on it since I wanted to do an announcement of these protests, peaceful protests, by the way, on the day before. And as I was looking into it, I found out that it actually started on Friday already. And there's one video clip There weren't that many people, maybe 20, 30 people on Friday afternoon, at least based on the video material. But you can hear the announcer say that the FAA had closed down their offices, or at least told the employees that they did not have to show up to work because of these protests taking place there. So whatever the FAA was thinking is they must have thought that this was going to be a big deal and maybe get out of hand. I don't know. But I guess to keep employees safe, they said, hey, you don't have to come to the office. Now, the real action took place on Saturday. I think that's when the majority of people were there. They had specifically told everybody, do not bring any drones to this event. I mean, you're not allowed to fly in Washington, and it's probably won't be looked upon lightly if you actually bring a drone or fly a drone there. So nobody did. It all went, as far as I can tell, really well organized. And it was good to have a physical presence, I think, at the offices of the FAA to show that, hey, we are really upset and we are really concerned with these new rules.
Yeah, we are really upset. And I mean, even other people are saying that the FAA is, quote unquote, giving a big giant middle finger to hobbyists. What's with this article?
Yeah, that headline caught my eye as well. It's from ARS News, the website that covers a lot of tech stuff, and then also, of course, covers drones as well. And when you cover drones, you can get around the remote ID. They had a headline saying that the FAA basically gives a big middle finger to drone hobbyists. I think that's true. I mean, for people who build drones or RC planes or fly drones in their backyards, I mean, when those drones are not going to be compatible with remote ID, you're going to be limited to those FRIAs. And that's a limited number of FAA approved sites where you can fly your drone in 400 feet in any given direction. Now, anybody who flies anything knows that 400 feet is not going to cut it. So that's your first problem. Secondly, there's only a number of those locations. So if none of those locations happen to be close to where you are, now you have to get in the car, drive somewhere. Could be half an hour, could be hours. And also the number of FRIAs is not going to increase. Yeah, there's only a 12-month period, according to the and current NPRM, where you can submit those areas. After the 12 months, they close it. If an area shuts down for whatever reason, there's not going to be a new one that reopens. So when you're flying drones for your hobby, you want to fly in your backyard, if you have a good sized property, you might be able to do that. Under the new rules, you can no longer. So I think the headline giving the middle finger to the hobbyist is unfortunately, is very accurate.
Wow. Well, yikes. I would say it probably is giving the middle fingers. So, hey, yeah, there's that. Well, okay, let's go ahead and try and move into a more happy subject. I think that might help at least some of our users. And what I'm talking about, a happy subject, even as travel is kind of compressing right now, luckily it's only for larger public events. And some drone conferences are being canceled, but others are not. And in fact, you're giving away tickets, it looks like, to one of those conferences. Haya, what's going on here?
Yeah, a conference small enough to still take place, but big enough to have an impact, I would say. That's your fly-in, right? In New Mexico at a Netflix movie set. I think it's going to be super exciting. And thank you for allowing us to give a ticket away. We thought about splitting them up and giving two tickets away, one for each day. In the end, we figured that people would have to travel to New Mexico potentially. We wanted to open this up to as large an audience as possible. So if you're going to travel to be in Santa Fe this April, then if you're making that kind of effort, I think you should be able to participate both days. This is taking place on a Netflix studio set close to Santa Fe, New Mexico, on April 4th and 5th, organized by DroneU. So really, you should be the talking be doing the talking about this, I guess. I'll be there as well. There's going to be a lot of drone flying. There's a creative and a technical day. You're going to get a lot of hands-on time with your drone, flying the drone, executing certain missions. And of course, you're not going to be alone. A lot of other drone enthusiasts will be there, as well as the trainers from DroneU. So it's a great chance to get some drone experience, have a lot of fun, meet up with a whole bunch of drone enthusiasts, and basically polish your skills. We're giving one ticket away, worth almost $1,000. I mean, people will still have to accommodate for their own travel and lodging and all that stuff. But we're giving one ticket away March 15th. So if you haven't done so yet, go to dronedj.com, look up the fly-in from DroneU and submit your information. I think right now we are at 63 entries, so there's a pretty good chance of winning. This is not like the New York State Lottery. I mean, here you can actually win and participate in this awesome event. So make sure you check that out, I would say.
That is awesome, Haya. Thank you so much. Yes, the fly-in is super exciting. It is a film set that's used by many A-list films. It's an old Western town. We haven't even announced our new sponsor yet, which is Outlaw Desert Racing, bringing in four Can-Am trucks for our subject tracking missions, which we are going to have two subject tracking missions. So really, really, really excited about that. I mean, unbelievably excited. So it's going to be awesome. It's definitely, you know, we're wondering what's going to happen if fewer people are going to arrive because of what's going on with the coronavirus. But luckily, because, you know, we're out in the middle of nowhere, it's not public. In fact, you can't even get within 10 miles of this site on any given road. So I'm hoping that people still decide to come, learn to wash their hands, and I don't think you'll need a mask in this beautiful, fresh desert air. It is awesome. So really excited about it. I was actually just out there the other day shooting a movie for an unknown company, literally on that same ranch, maybe a mile and a half away from that studio town. So, I mean, it is really cool. And what I try to explain to people, Haya, is that how many conferences do you go to that are just really focused around flying, meaning you're actually outside, you're flying. Some drone conferences, some drone conferences have like demo days where people can sell the crap out of their drone, but no one gets a chance to really fly it, you know? And you and I know you don't really learn anything from that. It's just a sales pitch.
All the conferences, where are they? Like LA, Denver, we've been to Baltimore. I mean, you go to Las Vegas. I mean, you're not flying. You're downtown in a big city. It's all indoors. It's all inside. There's a lot of talk about drones, a lot of presentations, a lot of product showcases, all that stuff. But actually, hands-on flying time, nothing.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why we're so excited about the fly-in. But here's another caveat, right? If you're a drone pilot and you ever film on set, typically, you cannot use that footage to promote yourself, show what you've done, say, hey, I shot that in a movie, until the movie has been released. And even then, some directors and production companies will not even allow you to show that footage unless it's in a private demo reel. Well, here's the benefit of the drone you fly in. Pilots get to come on site, fly 22 missions, and they get to actually utilize the video and the photos and the maps that they create, and they actually get to publish them. They can use it to promote themselves. I mean, even drone pilots who actually have the film set jobs can't do that, and I think that value in itself is unprecedented, but I'm going to stop the shameless plug of selling. I'm super excited, Haya. Can't wait to have you there, but I know that you're also doing something amazing in the fact that you're throwing a class for the business course. And I think a lot of people are really excited for that.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, nowadays, I mean, if you're going to start any business, it doesn't have to be a drone business, but if you're starting any kind of business, then you have to have some kind of online presence, right? So you need to be active on social media. You're going to have a website. I think with my background in internet marketing and also what I've done for Drone DJ, I know a few tricks. And basically, I want to put together a class, a program for people who are going to start out their drone business, or even for people who already have their drone business, and basically say, okay, so here's a list of all the different things, and let's just work through that list and see where you are with your business, or if you're going to start a drone business, how do you get started? What kind of site do you need? What's important? I mean, nowadays, of course, you want to be found, right, for the services that you do. And in the class, I'm going to explain and help people and show them how can you make sure that in your area, for your market and your audience, how are people going to be able to find your business and then basically hire you for your services. So it should be a really good class. I think we have, half a day for it scheduled. I want it to be kind of practical so that when people walk away from the class, they have something that they can actually use. So when they go back to their office, they can actually get to work. I don't want it to be all theory. I want it to be hands-on and practical.
I think that's really smart. I really do. I really, really do. So I'm excited, but let's move on. As I noticed in our next piece of news, I've actually been wondering about the update from the Autel Evo, because at CES, before coronavirus really hit hard, they were already talking about, well, we're going to launch one drone first, then the next, and the next. Expect it 6 to 8 weeks. But I'm not seeing any of these Autel Evos anywhere. You know, I noticed Billy Kyle has a bunch of videos, but it's like, hey, cool, but until you can buy one, what good is it? So what's the update from Autel on the Evo 2?
Yeah, talking to the Autel people at CES, apparently what had happened is that somebody in China from Autel already had started shipping out some samples to a bunch of YouTubers. So some people already had the drones in their hands, were starting to make these videos. Meanwhile, CES still had to take place, and the drones weren't even in the US yet. So they said during CES it was going to be at least another 6 weeks for the drones to arrive. Then, of course, coronavirus hit. We know that DJI shut their offices for 2 weeks. We know that Zero Robotics shut down their locations as well. We haven't heard something like that from Autel Robotics, but it's hard to imagine that they wouldn't have been affected by the coronavirus. Just recently, we got our hands on an email from Autel Robotics to the dealers that sell their drones, and they don't mention the coronavirus. What they do mention is that they had found a bug in the software, and what I've heard is that it might have been related with the distance to which you can fly the Autel drone. When I had the Autel Evo 2 to fly for a couple of days, I noticed that if you get a little further out, you start losing the connection. And of course, with any drone at some point, also depending on the interference, that connection gets choppy as the drone gets further away. Of course, when you fly the Autel Evo 2, automatically you start comparing it to the DJI Mavic 2. I mean, that's probably its most direct competitor. And what I noticed is that the Autel Evo started to get choppy in its video connection, the feed that you get back on that screen, much sooner than the Mavic. And I think that, at least based on what we've heard, that seems to be the case that they fixed now with the software updates. It's interesting that they don't at all talk about the coronavirus. They say that the slowdown allowed them to catch up basically with their inventory, and they're still on schedule. So these drones should make it to the US soon. After the Evo 2 with the 8K video, the 6K with the 1-inch sensor, that will be the next drone to come to the US. Back at CES, they said that was going to be another 6 to 8 weeks. So hopefully, let's say late May, early June is when we should see those drones here on the stateside. Then the third version with the thermal sensor, the dual camera setup, that's going to be another 6 weeks after the 6K version comes in. So we have to be patient. I was really impressed with the Evo 2, so I can't really wait to get my hands on the next model and start flying these drones, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I'm more excited for the thermal edition, though. Personally, that's what I'm more excited for. So just because having that large of a sensor is pretty cool.
Oh yeah, the resolution makes a big difference for sure for thermal.
It makes a huge difference for thermal. It's just it would just be nice if we could have some sort of radiometric thermal sensor. But again, that's going to take the price point super high. Although, you know, with FLIR's recent purchase of Aireon, I think that there's a huge opportunity for FLIR to come out with a drone that could really compete with the Mavic 2 Enterprise Dual and the Evo 2 thermal whenever it does come out. But Aireon, wow, no offense, but those drones really suck. I've seen them. I've spent time with them. There's a group out here in New Mexico on base that has a fleet of them. They're an interesting platform to work with. Very, very, very interesting. But if they can come up with a seamless and convenient product that's affordable, hey, they could just take over the market real quick, you know?
Well, if there ever was an opportunity for other drone manufacturers to step in, especially US-based drone manufacturers, then I would say right now is the time.
Couldn't agree more. But look, it's already been 25 minutes in this new show, and we're literally just getting started. So, you know, DJI had teased some new products, and it looks like you've got something already coming out for us from DJI. What's up in this next piece of drone news?
Yeah, this goes back to the Drone Master. Remember last year when DJI all of a sudden came out with the RoboMaster S1? Nobody saw that one coming. Nobody expected something like that to show up. We didn't see anything in FCC filings. I don't know how they did the registration and the filing of those documents, but it didn't show up the way it normally showed up. So everybody was kind of taken by surprise. And now we received yesterday some photos of a product from DJI that very closely resembles the RoboMaster, but as far as I can tell, it's not the RoboMaster. And it doesn't seem to be a second generation, like a newer, improved model. I suspect that these pictures that we have here on Drone DJ are actually a different type of RoboMaster. I think rather than going from Gen 1 to Gen 2, I think they're expanding their portfolio and coming out with something else. For instance, in one of these photos, you can see something that looks like a grabbing hand with like rubber components on the ends. So I think with this one, you might be able to actually hold on to other things. There are some similarities as well. There's the same sensors that detect whether you're being fired at or when you actually are being hit, because with those RoboMasters, if you remember, you can actually fire upon each other and shoot. Frank Wang, the CEO and founder of DJI, apparently is a real big fan of those Robo Wars and always wanted to come out with something like this. So yeah, we're very curious to see what the actual product is going to be. Most likely it's going to be modular. Most likely it's going to be that you something that you have to assemble yourself. It's very likely going to have an educational component as well, probably more geared towards a younger audience also. I don't think it will be flying. It doesn't look like it's going to fly. But hey, it's a new DJI product, and this one might actually come to us really soon. And we've heard a date of March 9th, so that's less than a week away. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens here.
Wow, are you seeing any other potential DJI releases at this time other than the RoboMaster? Because I think it's clear, Haya, that everyone knows the RoboMaster really came from Frank Wang's college dreams. I mean, it's pretty clear. If you were living in a dorm room, it would be really cool to have a little robot to shoot some darts at your buddies for fun in the middle of the night when you're hammered.
Yeah. Now, RoboMasters are fun. Of course, we only really start being interested when they actually fly as well. So going back to DJI releases and upcoming drones, for now, it seems that there's going to be a DJI Mavic Air 2 to be released late in April, potentially. The DJI Mavic 3 Pro that originally was rumored to be launched in January and then kind of got pushed back towards the summer. Now it becomes highly questionable whether DJI is actually going to launch that drone in 2020. Apparently, the sales of the Mavic 2 are still so strong that there is no real need for a follow-up drone. Also, the competition, even though we've already seen and heard about the Evo 2, of course, and the Skydio 2, these drones are still only available in such small numbers that they don't really hurt the sales of the Mavic 2, apparently. And what we've learned, basically, is that DJI is very much profit-focused and very focused on sales numbers as well. As long as the sales for the Mavic 2 aren't really hurting, it seems unlikely that they're going to be launching a next-generation Mavic 3 Pro drone.
Well, if you look at DJI, a company accountants and amortization schedules can now rejoice, Haya.
Ah, but DJI is looking at the numbers, and it's, of course, I mean, if it's about money, it's hard to blame them when you're on a different perspective and you're passionate about drones and flying drones and you want to be able to fly the newest and latest technology, then this does become very frustrating. I mean, better drones are coming out and a lot of people are looking at DJI to come out with a better Mavic as well, especially since a lot of people were quite disappointed with the 4K video capabilities of the Mavic 2 Pro. So we're very much looking forward to a newer drone. But then again, if you look at the Phantom 4, I mean, that's still in production now, and it's the same story there. I spoke to Mario Rabello, the general manager basically for DJI in North America, and he said that they will keep making that drone for as long as there is a real demand from people. So it seems that DJI is very much focused on sales and demands and profit numbers as well.
Yeah, it should be interesting if people do continue to still buy drones if the proposed remote ID rules go through. Because if the proposed rules go through as is, like I said earlier in the show, everyone's fleet would be deemed pretty much useless unless you were flying in a FRIA, which is again limited to about 400 feet laterally, aka drones are still useless. So in an effort to really understand how proposed remote ID will affect us as commercial pilots, but also affect us as hobby pilots, it's really important to know, and it's going to be interesting to see how that affects the sales. But to further understand how these rules really, really have affected hobbyist pilots, as you know, in this next piece of drone news. I had FPV Freedom Coalition's Dave Messina on the show to talk about how, well, we're all hobbyists, and to really understand in a succinct and rather intelligent way why this is such a problem for hobbyists. And Haya, I just have to say, it's so important for commercial users, third-party users, whatever. We all started somewhere, and we typically all started as hobbyists, just like you. So it's really important to understand that as we continue to fight remote ID, that we've got to come at this as a unified body of pilots. But anyway, I noticed you wrote this article on that show. Surprised to see it. Happily surprised. What did you learn from that show? What do you think is important?
Well, I thought it was interesting because, I mean, we know that the drone world is quite fragmented, right? I mean, you have different groups and organizations, and if you're an FPV drone pilot, then you might not necessarily deal much with RC model aircraft pilots or the people who just fly regular consumer drones. I thought it was really interesting to hear Dave's perspective on that, especially since he's been flying for quite some time as well. I also thought it was really good that he's making a strong effort to actually bring people together and create a voice for different drone pilots. And in a different way, I'm trying to do the same thing with Drone DJ. And I think anybody who is pro drones and who wants to further drones in society and be able to use them for good, I'd be happy to support them. And when I was listening to the interview you gave or you had with Dave, I thought, first of all, it was a very good interview. He has a lot of very interesting things to say. And I figured I wanted to share it on Drone DJ and hopefully help Dave to reach a larger or even a different audience than he already reaches through his own site.
I got to say, man, I respect that man wholeheartedly. There is no one who speaks as eloquently as he does and showcases the issues in a way that are impactful and meaningful. And frankly, I have not seen anyone work harder than him in fighting remote ID. And I mean that seriously. I know I know a lot of people have written really long reports, but as far as bringing people together, as far as working with people and putting our differences aside and putting our egos aside, I have not seen someone do it as well as Dave. And that man will forever have my respect.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I wanted to help him in any way I can. And if I can share his information and his story on Drone DJ, I'd be more than happy to do so.
Sorry to interrupt you. I couldn't agree more, though.
It was good. That was it.
Now, in this next piece of drone news, as public safety is seemingly always under the microscope from the federal government about how they use drones and which drones they are allowed to use, this ever-evolving regulatory, environment that public safety can choose to work inside of is always changing. That being said, it's exciting to see a very unique and real solution for public safety programs who maybe can't afford building a drone program or they've realized all the problems in building drone programs. But Impossible Aerospace offers an alternative that, well, it might surprise you in how they're supporting public safety. Haya, what do you have?
Yeah, Impossible Aerospace. This is the company with the drone that pretty much flies forever, started by a Tesla engineer. This drone is made basically all from batteries, not just in the middle part of the quadcopter, but even extending into the arms, they're all battery packed. And this drone has therefore a crazy flight time. It's not really focusing or targeted at hobbyists or consumer drone pilots for that matter. This is much, much more geared towards first responders. And Impossible Aerospace just launched a new program called Air Support, where basically in a metropolitan area, they want to be able to put a number of drones on different rooftops of buildings and basically have those drones ready anytime to be flown out and to respond to emergencies or accidents or whatever else might be happening. We've already seen this before. Chula Vista Police Department, they had done a similar thing as a test among the IPP program. And they've been very, very successful. They've had about 1,000 drone missions in the first year, and it helped them basically to make 130 arrests. And it's the same situation. they had drones set up ready to fly out. I think that was only a mile because they were still flying within visual line of sight. But they will be able to get a drone to an emergency location faster than anybody physically can get to. And it seems that Impossible Aerospace is trying to basically mimic that same strategy and have a number of drones spread out through a city ready to be launched at any moment and to be able to fly out and at least give a aerial perspective of that situation so that in the command center people can see, hey, it's a car accident, there's three cars involved, we need to send out a number of police officers, firemen, and at least they have an idea of what the situation is like. I'm excited for them to do this. First, of course, because it's an American drone company, so that's a plus right there. Secondly, I think these drones can actually do a lot of good as well, so it'd be interesting to see them out there. They're also kind of pushing the envelope because they want to be able to fly these drones beyond visual line of sight, so they're going to need some waivers and approvals from the FAA in order to do so, which I think is also good because it kind of pushes the envelope, right? I mean, we're looking for drone applications where we want to be able to use drones in situations that we haven't been able to use them prior. So I think it's very interesting, this piece of news.
Yeah, it is really interesting. I'm wondering how they're legally allowed to do this. I'm wondering how they have the flight over people waivers that have been almost impossible to acquire. Obviously, they're handing out more and more of those, and that's becoming like the next big waiver. But BVLOS flights, to see those two in tandem, I haven't seen yet, other than like I think UPS did it under 135, and Wing did it under 135, and Amazon did it under 135. So how is this legal?
I don't know. I mean, they're not expanding on that in their statement. They only say that their team will also help out with training the pilots required for beyond visual line of sight flights along with the certificate of authorizations required by the FAA. So it seems that Impossible Aerospace will actually help you acquire those. How and if that's going to work out, I don't know, but we'll keep an eye on them and see what's going on there.
Yeah, it's fascinating because they're saying, and this is something that I got to bring this up because this absolutely kills me. One of the biggest problems in public safety is the same problem in universities and academic institutions. It's this cut, copy, and paste. It's this ideology that if I have resources like a COA, standard operating procedures, pre-flight checklists, task lists, proficiency and currency standardization lists, amongst maintenance protocol lists, amongst amortization schedules, amongst crew management documentation, all of these things are being cut, copy, and pasted. None of these people who have the most to lose are learning how to make the right decisions on which way to go when operating under a COA. Or, for example, a lack of specificity has really caused, in my opinion, a lot of drone programs to fold because the lack of specificity causes astronomical waste in purchasing, amongst other things. And so when companies are giving out COAs, they're giving out resource documentation, like here you go, cut, copy, and paste, those groups who accept that and fly under those rules without understanding the knowledge necessary to make decisions in the field are ultimately setting themselves up to fail. And I saw something that drone responders put out, and I wanted to cry because it was good. It's a great idea. The intentions are great. But at the same time, the lack of specificity, not teaching people about how to make the decisions relevant to whether you should even operate under a COA or operate under Part 107. What does that look like? Companies like Impossible Aerospace right now, I'm just looking at their air support page, and that's where I'm getting this information from. Yeah. These companies are going out there saying, hey, don't worry, we'll take care of your COA, right? Well, should your public safety agency even fly under a COA? Do you know the pros and cons between operating under one or another? Mm-hmm. And so there's this direct contradiction here, Haya, because in order to get a COA for public safety to fly drones, they are not allowed to have training flights under the COA. It's emergency operations only. So they have to go to an area outside of controlled airspace or fly under Part 107 to do training. Well, here we are on the Impossible Aerospace website, and it's how he will help you with your COA, and then you go to training. Okay, well, technically under most PAL COAs, you're not allowed to train. How are they going to do that?
It should be the other way around. You train first and then.
Bingo. And then also, not only the other way around, but you need to give people a lot of information on whether they should even operate under a COA or not. And you know what? These companies, drone responders, they are setting up the most trusted, humble people in the world to fail. Firefighters, law enforcement risk their lives every single day for people that they probably don't like and probably will never like. And you know what? They drop their ego and they're super humble and they go out and try to save people's lives. In doing that, they take on a lot of liability. And if they fly under a PAL COA or a public safety COA, well, guess what? If I'm an egregious asshole who just got arrested and the department used their drone and they had a COA as the asshole who just got arrested, I can now file a FOIA request for every single flight that drone has taken. And as a knowledgeable pilot, I could easily discredit the police force and the drones by simply getting a FOIA of all of their flights and literally systematically looking at locations and flights, and I could probably find 30 to 40 or even 50 FAA violations, completely negating the value of the drone to the police department and setting up the officers for a liability battle that they probably can't win, which sucks. So we're setting up these law enforcement officers, these firefighters, to fail. And like, good, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. That's why this goes back to, if you are teaching people how to fly, you have got to know from a practical standpoint what is involved. And I'm sorry to get so passionate, but you know what? When we've got the blind leading the blind at the FAA, watch the problems trickle down. And you know who's going to pay for it. It's not going to be the people at the FAA. It's not going to be private entities. It's going to be these law enforcement officers that get sued in court that were trying to use a drone to do something good, but because they weren't given good information about their drone program, now their career is in jeopardy. And I'm seeing it already, and you know, I'm seeing it already, and it really infuriates me.
I hope it doesn't come that far. I hope Impossible Aerospace is on top of this to make sure that they do the right thing. And I would imagine they would be heavily involved in the first so many drone flights for sure. But I see what you're saying, and it's a valid point.
Well, it's not only about Impossible Aerospace; it's about all these other companies too, just trying to train public safety and help them out. And I mean, I haven't watched this air support video that Impossible Aerospace has on their website, but I mean, the thumbnail is all in 3D, and it just makes you wonder how much of this, again, has been done, and again, legally, because it's, you know, yeah. Anyway, I love Impossible Aerospace, frankly, because I think what they're trying to do is really cool. But guys, ladies and gentlemen, we cannot pursue sales by putting the people who are willing to save our lives in a danger with liability. And it is our responsibility as private entities to ensure that we do the most research possible in helping these people and getting a practical standpoint, because this is a much bigger macro issue, Haya. As my friend Ongood would say, you know, it's a much bigger issue. So that being said, this is almost an hour long show, and I'm not sure how much longer I can record. So let's go ahead and end it here. But there's a lot more news for next week that I'm even excited about. And just to tease it, I think there's some good stuff to talk about when it comes to drones for good, when it comes to Virginia Tech, although that might be quite a controversial topic, and then DJI lowering their price points to reduce those tariffs that we were all paying for. Great stuff. But Haya, as you know, it's you've got somewhere to go. I've got somewhere to go. We're going to have to save all this juicy stuff for one more episode. And I feel bad because I just kind of ranted and we could have used that time to talk about those pieces of news.
No worries, man. I think every week we already make a selection of news articles to talk about. And even the ones that we pick, there's always more. So we can go on and on with these shows. Totally cool to wrap it up. Let's save all the other bits for next week. The only problem is there's going to be new news next week as well. So we'll see how much we have to talk about then.
Sounds good, Haya. Well, thanks again for joining me today. And thanks again for always willing to deep dive in this information. It's a blast talking to you. And it's something that I enjoy every week. And I hope others do as well. So thank you, Haya.
Same here, Paul. It's my pleasure as well. Always looking forward to doing this show. So on to the next one next week. I'll be here.
Sounds good, Haya. Well, thank you. And thank you, everyone who listens to the show. Please don't be afraid to leave us a review, leave us a comment. Yes, I'll get to the comments on the news shows. It's so hard for me to get to comments at all the different social media platforms. So bear with me. I will be happy to answer your comments. That being said, please do leave us a review wherever you download the show. And if you watch it on YouTube, don't be afraid to subscribe to the channel and help other people find information that could potentially, well, save the hobby. That's going to do it for us today. My name is Paul. He's the Flying Dutchman. This is Ask Drone U.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.